His bark and bite, they're about the same. Talkin' Trees with John Eisenhower, Rosie on the House.
Beverly wrote in and was concerned that we don't mention mistletoe enough and the destruction it can create on trees.
It is pretty destructive, and it's carried, you know, it is a parasite. It's an unwanted plant that in that it feeds off of the vascular system of the host plant. Generally, it's transported into your trees by birds that have been feeding on the seeds in other plants in the desert, and then the seeds are sticky, so they get stuck to the feet, the bird's feet, and the bird's beak, and then the bird flies, or it'll poop the seeds out, and they'll fall into the crotch of a tree that they're sitting in, and then that little seed will grow and sprout and send its roots down into through the bark of the host tree. And then it'll start feeding off the vascular system, the nourishment it receives from the host tree. And if you have a small outbreak or you notice a little mistletoe in one of your trees, and it's out near the edge and perimeter of the tree and some of the smaller branches, you can actually remove those branches and get rid of the mistletoe if you've caught it early enough. If it gets down into the larger diameter wood, of course, it's impossible without destroying the tree to take it out. What we recommend is that there are some treatments, some chemical treatments, to at least suppress it and keep it from spreading. And also, you can just simply remove it. And if you want to try to remove it at the best time of year, you'd want to try to get it before it blooms and goes to seed, because it's those seeds that end up allowing the birds to spread it around your neighborhood. So you can go in, it's real easy to pull out. You just get some gloves on and just kind of, you know, pull it down. It's very weak wooded, and it's easy to pull and break off.
So as long as it's not seeding, I don't have to worry about putting it in a plastic sack to keep it from spreading and populating.
Yeah, there's other treatment methods. Some people kind of wrap the branches where the infection is on some of the lower parts of the tree in the larger diameter wood, wrapping it with black plastic, and that will prevent sunlight from getting to it, with the idea that you're going to kind of starve it. But you're also, you know, in some of the smooth bark trees like Palo Verde, you'll also be starving the Palo Verde bark too, so you want to be a little bit careful to do that. Might be better to wrap the plastic on like a mesquite or another tree that doesn't require, you know, doesn't photosynthesize through the bark. But yeah, there are a few other methods, and as I said, there are some chemical treatments that are available too that are sort of effective. They are not a real cure-all for it, but they can suppress the spread of the mistletoe in a given tree.
Now, I've got a potential stumper here for you. What tree would you recommend for Payson that the elk won't eat?
Gosh, I'm going to have to defer to an expert in that part of the state. I know that there are some nurseries and maybe some the Agricultural Extension Office in your part of the state might have a better answer to that question, or maybe even a local arborist, you know, call a certified arborist. If you, wherever you are in the state of Arizona, if you're looking for a certified arborist near you, you can just look up treesaregood.org, treesaregood.org, and there's a button there that says find an arborist, and you just simply put in your zip code, and it will give you the arborist closest to you and a listing radiating out from you with several arborists in your area. Then you can just call, pick up the phone, give them a call, and ask that same question.
Plant Fair Nursery is in Star Valley, a little past Payson. I will tell you the correct answer to that.
None.
Mature.
Mature. Okay.
You've
ones
got
they can't reach.
To find ones they can't reach.
I know.
Big.
Well, we have some small fruit trees, you know, up in Pine, Arizona, near just 17 miles past Payson, and the deer and the elk will actually get up on the rear end of the other deer just put their feet up so they can browse at a little bit higher elevation. So they'll stand there, and it's kind of a team effort, you know. It's like, you know, what's going on? I mean, you thought you're up high enough so they can't reach them that high. Well, the elk will actually get up and put their front hooves on the back
give them
end
a boost.
Another one. Yeah, so they can reach up there and get a little bit higher. So, yeah, those fruit trees have survived, but they have no low branches on them. They're about 25 feet tall, and from about 15, all the fruit is from up between 15 and 20 feet up.
Mountain life. Most successful gardeners I've seen in mountain areas all
have fences.
Well, not exactly. Greenhouses.
Wow.
Which,
yeah,
I guess you could say is, you know, they're fenced out, but it to be a good gardener, one for the weather too, but second, the wildlife is nearly impossible.
A greenhouse at those higher elevations does extend your growing season by several months, both on the front end and the back end of winter. Yeah, exactly.
And they may have figured out how to give each other a boost on a piggyback, but they still haven't figured out how to open a door.
Just give them time.
On our talking trees to do, we've got staking. We had somebody ask earlier about mesquite trees. You were talking about them, and they said, why are they a poor tree? Because you always see them blown over when the monsoons hit, and that's usually, it's not that the mesquites are poor, it's that we do a poor job planting and maintaining the mesquites out in their natural environment. You go to a mesquite wash up Beeline Highway, you know, there's hundreds of them there that are huge.
Yeah, and our native trees grow beautifully and safely through the monsoon because they have lower branches and the wind can't get up underneath them. We often plant, you know, our desert trees that normally grow like a large shrub in the desert, and we trim them up like a beach umbrella, and the wind can get underneath them and topple them over. So that is a problem. Until the trees are more mature and anchored in the soil, they are going to be vulnerable when wind can get underneath them. So you might need to put some stakes in place to kind of give them a little bit of an assist as we're heading into the monsoon. Again, the article, Preparing Trees for Summer, that's on our website at itreeservice.com, is a good place to start because it talks about plant selection and planting, your staking and guying, a little bit about irrigation, about good pruning practices, how wind works in trees, and of course, you know, providing mechanical support, doing cabling and bracing, and even we actually install prop systems, and prop systems are a metal system that's anchored in a concrete footing, and provides a bit of a saddle to go up underneath a long extended limbs that have a long horizontal growth direction, and we can actually put props under some of those, and we've done that successfully. We have a system that we've developed that's really, really an elegant system. We can paint them to color match the bark of the trees so they're less obvious in the landscape, again, using galvanized materials that are really weather resistant and could last several decades before they need attention.
That's another example, as well as overwatering. We don't turn our irrigations off. There's some trees you still need the irrigation on through the monsoons, but if you've got a aggressive watering schedule on a mesquite where the water's already soaked, it makes it that much easier to blow it over.
Yeah, if we're into that monsoon cycle where we're getting several afternoon storms, you know, it's time to go ahead and throw your irrigation timer onto the rain setting. That rain setting just temporarily interrupts the irrigation cycle, so it's just a simple click. On most timers, you'll see the little rain setting. Just flip it to rain. It doesn't change any of your settings. You don't have to reset them. All you need to do when you come back to the timer, once the monsoons have sort of passed, then you can throw that switch back on. Just be sure you don't forget to turn it off when you leave on vacation, which many people have done. They leave it on rain. Oh, my gosh. But it's an easy thing. Just flip it back to the auto position. And it'll resume all the old settings.
And if you're installing a new landscape irrigation system, there's an app for that. These irrigation controllers, now you can control completely from your phone.
Yeah, a lot of these smart devices allowing you to do a lot of those those home maintenance functions from your phone. Very, very cool. Yeah, watering. Be sure that you don't, again, don't overwater, especially if we have a monsoon that's heading our way and we know there's going to be some high winds. Better to dry out that root zone a little bit so it's not waterlogged and that root system is, you know, would completely fail. It's one thing to get a branch that fails. You know, that's bad enough to lose a branch on a tree, but it's devastating, catastrophic when you have the entire root plate, the whole root system of the trees fail. And that's quite often, as you said, because of frequent irrigation around the base of the tree. It's already loose in the soil due to the water, and then the wind comes, and it's not a good combination.
You've got an opportunity for more learning.
Yeah, we've got a bunch of classes coming up. I'm teaching two pruning classes at the Desert Botanical Garden in July and August, and I'm also teaching a class at the Shade Conference this year on sustainable pruning. And those are the two classes at the Desert Botanical Garden are two-hour classes, some hands-on, kind of fun coaching. The Shade Conference, it's I'm going to be covering the same materials in my class, but if you're a landscape professional or an arborist, or if you're just an interested homeowner who wants to go a little bit deeper in your knowledge of maintaining plants and want to be at a kind of a world-class sort of industry event, it's being held at the Desert Ridge Marriott in August 30th on Friday. It's an all-day seminar, very well-attended and very popular in the horticulture industry here in Arizona. And if you're a motivated enthusiast, want to get a great day of education, attend the Shade Conference on Friday, August 30th. And the two classes in July and August are July 14th, which is a Sunday, I believe, and Saturday.
July 14th and August 31st.
Yes, Sunday, July 14th and Saturday, August 31st.
That's the Desert Botanical Gardens.
Yeah, that's at dbg.org if you want to register for that class, dbg.org for either of those two summer classes, pruning classes in July and August.
Then the Shade Conference is put on by the Arizona Nursery Association.
Yes.
And that's at Desert Ridge again?
Mm-hmm, Desert Ridge Marriott, yep.
Don't be intimidated. A lot of professionals there. There's going to be a lot of things that you're not going to, this class has so many hours for this certification and so many hours for that certification.
But look up.
Don't even worry about any of that.
Just go online and look up Shade Conference 2019, and you can click and look through all the various classes. They have three different tracks on design elements, on trees. And I mean, they've just got a lot of choices, and it's a great educational day for but I think I just know that there's a lot of our listeners who would love to attend that and could benefit from it. I would steer them away from it if it was all technical. It is so practical. It's one of those great educational days when even homeowners would just thoroughly enjoy it if you've got the day to take off.
I try and never miss it. And a lot of times because work, I can cover it and attend it and not have to take a day off of work to be there.
It's always good to see you down there too. It's great. It's a great day.